TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. It's the Score North Twin Show.
Welcome to the Score North Twin Show. It is Judd Zolgad and Jake Depew, as always, talking about the Minnesota Twins. We do it twice a week. We do it on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Last time we talked, Jake DePierre, the sky was absolutely falling. The Twins had lost six consecutive games. Rocco Baldelli had called a closed-door meeting after the loss on Monday night, and all hell was breaking loose. And as is so great about sports, 2 days after that, we now regroup again to do our latest Score North Twins podcast. They've won two consecutive games. Everything is right with the world. So I got a question for you. You tweeted out something that I want to get to immediately, because sometimes I look at stats and my eyes don't tell me what the stats do. How the hell can the Chicago White Sox be considered a good defensive baseball team after the absolute garbage that I've seen two of the last three nights, including last night, where they made four errors? And honest to God, if you've ever seen the Bad News Bears, the movie, they look like the Bad News Bears. And then you tweeted some stats that show they're actually proficient in the field. Help me.
Yeah, I don't understand that one at all. I think defensive metrics, in terms of advanced stats analytics, I think they're way behind offensive metrics in terms of telling us useful information. I think the eye test when it comes to defense is still a really valid way to assess a player and to assess teams. I think with offensive statistics, you really can. They've got it down to such a science now that you really can question whether the eye test is really that valid anymore. Certainly, you can look at things like players' swings and that type of thing. But with defense, I still think the eye test matters. And yeah, Sports Info Solutions, which is a site that I love, but they tweeted out that the White Sox were number one in the league, number one in all of baseball in defensive runs saved, and that the Twins were fourth. And I basically tweeted, anybody who just watched the series between the Twins and the White Sox, where those two teams were just kicking the ball all over the field and making one defensive mistake after another, it was a pretty sad display, I think, by both teams. Anybody who watched that would not really buy into those rankings. So they actually replied to me. They said, it should be noted that the White Sox get 12 of their 29 defensive runs saved from things other than fielding ground balls and catching liners and fly balls. That is the pitch framing, outfield arms, double plays turn, bunt defense, among other things. So they're trying to defend their metrics there. And, it's a great site, but I don't buy it. You can watch the White Sox and say that they're a good defensive team.
You're telling me that the incompetence that we saw on at least two occasions behind the plate from the plate umpire in this series, including last night where I think his name was Blankney, was just awful. You're telling me that fooling the umpire with Yasmani Grandal framing pitches or McCann is what, okay, you know what, then I'm with you. I give up there.
Yeah, let me just say, I don't want to rip that site because I do think they do really good work.
No, I just give up.
I do not agree that either of those two teams, the Twins or the White Sox, yes, are strong defensively. The Twins were good earlier in the year, but boy, they have looked really bad the last few weeks defensively.
So in the past two or three days now, Byron Buxton comes back on Tuesday and makes a catch. I believe it was an Edwin Encarnacion fly ball that was going to go in the flower pots. And as only Buxton can do, he ranges far to his right, is basically in left field and makes an unbelievable catch, comes up shortly after that and knocks in what proves to be the winning run in that game. Then last night, Josh Donaldson comes back. Yes, he struck out in his last three appearances at the plate, but he also had a single and double, and the double that I think he had in the second inning of that game, Jake Depew scored two runs, and so he's back. That's the good news. The bad news is that during the course of last night's game, Max Kepler goes out with tightness in his left groin while scoring a run from first base, in fact, on the Donaldson double, and then Luis Arraez goes out with a recurring problem of his right knee, which has become a season-long problem. I think it's his right. The Twins said left last night, but I think it's the right. But anyway, it's become a reoccurring season-long problem going back to the Twins' summer camp at Target Field. All of this being said, getting set to start an important five-game series with a doubleheader on Friday against the Detroit Tigers at Target Field, assuming that we're going to have roster moves now made and that Arise and Kepler are not going to be available for at least a few days, if not longer, what are your transactions that you make to make up for the guys who have gone out?
Yeah, so we've seen the Twins be really conservative in terms of nursing guys back to health, which I think most of the time makes sense, but we've also seen them string guys along where they don't put them on the IL right away and the Twins end up playing shorthanded. That happened with Josh Donaldson. And I would really urge the Twins not to do that in this case with Kepler and Arise. If Kepler and Arise are not ready for the start of that Detroit series, I think you have to put them on the IL because they're playing seven games. The Twins are playing seven games in the span of 5 days. They have five against Detroit, including a doubleheader, and then immediately go to St. Louis and play a doubleheader against St. Louis. You cannot play those games, especially that Detroit series, which is critical. The Twins are still only three games up on Detroit for a wild card spot. You cannot play that series shorthanded with a short bench. And Alex Avila has back stiffness too, so we don't know if he's going to be available. So I think if they're not available for Friday, game one, you got to IL them. Now, the question, to get to your question, who would you replace them with? I think what they will probably do is call up Lamont Wade Jr., who I do like, to replace Kepler. And if they can get Ildemaro Vargas, and I apologize if I'm pronouncing his name incorrectly, if they can get him back, they just DFA'd him. But, I talked to some people on Twitter, and it sounds like they can maybe still get him back. They'll probably do that. They'll probably just get Vargas back and put him on the active roster. Personally, I think this is the time now where you call up Alex Kirilloff. I really do. I think if he's ready, and we don't know because we don't get media access in St. Paul. Nobody really knows what's going on with these guys. But they should give media access to that. I'm sorry. If the Twins coaches determine that Kirilloff is ready and he's taking good at bats and he's healthy, it's time to call him up. Because I think this Kepler thing is probably going to be a nagging thing. I think he's been hurt on and on. He's had foot issues throughout this year. He hasn't looked totally right to me. If it's going to be a long-term thing, you have to put in a guy who can play every day to replace Kepler. Kirilloff, to me, is that guy. He's a top prospect, top 100 consensus prospect. He essentially fills in that left-handed bat in the outfield that Kepler gives you. To me, that's the logical move. We've seen all these other teams call up their prospects. The Twins haven't yet. I think it's time. Let's see what Alex Kirilloff can do.
I love it. I think that's exactly right. And look, if you get Wade here, he's a backup. And here's what you're doing wrong, too. So I think to bolster your point, Jake, what you are doing wrong right now is, and this has been true of Adrianza, it became true of Vargas, and it's true of my guy. As much as I love him, Marwin, Marwin, God did not put him on this earth to play every day. He's not here for that, right? He can't run now, and I think that might be a product of the – I think he had an off-season procedure done on his knee, but he is slow as molasses now. And if you get Wade back if you call Wade back up from St. Paul, that means that you're going to put Marwin back in right field or Marwin at second base. The point being is now you are presented with the perfect opportunity that we talked about, I think, on the Tuesday podcast. It's exactly right to take a look at a guy like Kirilloff. I mean, it could not script itself out any better. And to what you said about Kepler, I agree. If you put the pieces of the puzzle together with Kepler now, the drop fly ball on Monday against the White Sox. Go back to, he left the game last Wednesday, I believe, in Cleveland. He fouled the ball off his front foot, which looked bad. I thought it was, but he didn't miss time. He made a diving attempt for a play on Wednesday night. He missed the ball. It looked odd. I think something's off here. And I don't know if it goes back to a groin that he just re-aggravated as he went from first base to score in last night's game, rounded the bases or what. But if the Twins are ever going to be cautious, and God knows they always are, this is the ultimate time to say, Max, if we're going to have success in the playoffs, we probably need you to be a better player than you have certainly been for the majority of this season. So we're going to shut you down for, let's say, 10, 11 days. And we're going to, instead of just saying, hey, Marwin, get back out to right or something like that, we're going to give a kid a shot who needs that shot. I think for a guy like a Larnach or a Kirilloff, Rooker, take your pick. This scripts out perfectly to have the opportunity now in important games. And again, I'll go back to this with no fans. So the pressure of the fans is gone. This scripts out perfectly to take a look at a decent look at a player like that and at least judge where they are progress wise, because some of these guys are at a point in their career now where they're going to have to help, you know, fairly soon. Like, this is no longer a, hey, in 3 years thing, right? I love this idea.
And you know, if the Twins were eight games up on the eight seed and, you know, a total lock to make the playoffs, then maybe you make an argument, okay, you just go with Wade and Vargas because it doesn't matter. But these games do matter. And so I think you have to put the most talent you can on the field. And to that end, and by the way, I love Wade, and I actually think that Wade should be the backup outfielder, not Cave. I realize that's bad timing after Cave had a good game yesterday, but I really like Wade, but he's not an everyday player in my view. And I don't think Vargas is either. And so to that end, I would actually consider calling up Travis Blankenhorn, who's a second base prospect, infield prospect, plays all over. Yep. He's on the 40 man, so you don't even have to make a 40 man move for him like you would with Kirilloff. I would call him up, and I would call up Jahan Duran to make this start in the doubleheader against Detroit, because you have the 29th man, right? So you don't even need to send anybody down or make a roster move to call up Jahan Duran. You could just call him up as the 29th man to start one game of that doubleheader. And it's, you know, there's no travel involved, right? You don't have to fly him commercial or anything like that. So if you're
driving down 94, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Made that drive many, many times. If you want to use Duran this year, there is no better time than in this doubleheader. So, I would like to see all three of those guys against Detroit. I don't know that they'll do it, but I think that's the move. As far as Kepler, yeah, I mean, he hasn't – I don't know. It seems like he hasn't been healthy this year. He wasn't healthy at the end of last year. He had upper body issues, and, you know, they need to get him right for the playoffs. But let's see some prospects now. It's time.
By the way, I almost forgot this. You deserve kudos.
Oh.
Matt Whistler. Matt, you forecasted this not Tuesday. I want to say it was last week. You forecasted. You said, I'm sick of the Twins using openers constantly, because in three of, like, the five cases that they've gone with the opener, it's been Whistler. And your point was, you were very succinct. You told me Whistler's good enough that to use him in that role is fine, but it's sort of a waste because he's got back end of the bullpen talent.
Yep.
Matt Whistler on Tuesday night came in with, God bless him, that slider, and got a save. And it was essentially, it was almost, I think, exactly what you were trying to say last week, which is, if you have starting pitchers, i.e. Duran, Pineda, guys to start games who can go, let's say, five, Matt Whistler becomes valuable, used in the right way, in the right role. You called it. And I'm serious.
Thank you, Judd. I appreciate that. You know,
it was good. But, I mean, you forecasted it.
Yeah, well, because they were using him basically as a starter, because they had used him as an opener two times in a row, and he only pitched when he opened. So he was essentially a starter who was pitching very limited innings. And I just thought that they weren't using him enough, because I think he's a back end guy. He's shown that this year. They saw something with his strikeout rate when he was with Seattle, and they saw how effective that slider was. And I think they basically told him, throw that slider 90% of the time. If you go back and look at that save against the White Sox, I don't know how many fastballs he threw, maybe one or two. It was essentially slider, slider, slider.
Yes.
In short stints, when you only face a guy, a lineup once, that's a super effective pitch. And he's showing it. So, I'm glad that the Twins were obviously listening to the Score North Twins show and took my advice. You're welcome, Twins. I assume the check is in the mail.
No, actually not. Sorry about that. I'm sorry, Jake. The check is not.
No.
So the Twins take two or three from the White Sox. I want to get back to last night's game. Jose Barrios last night. Six innings, three hits, one run, two walks, eight strikeouts. Good lineup, great performance. Let me throw a theory that I can't completely give you all the details about, but I've got a theory here about why Barrios' year has seemingly been a roller coaster. He's had two really good starts. What, Cleveland, I believe, was one last night. He's had some okay starts, not great, and he's had some bad starts. So when he got taken out of the game last night, and I was there, so I didn't see this on TV. But in the postgame Zoom, Marty Gellner asked him, Barrios, about the fact that I guess he was emotional. He was, like, celebrating. And she's like, what was that about? And he said, something is going on at home that I don't want to bring to the clubhouse because we're supposed to be happy and joyous here. And he didn't say what, but he said something is going on. When Baldelli then did his postgame Zoom call, he also alluded to this. No details, okay? But this falls under my theory of sports. As much as we, you know, look at COVID and say, just tune that out. I mean, you're playing baseball, right? These guys are humans. It's impossible. I think that if Barrios was emotional after his performance last night, that's not something probably that just started. I wonder, because the one thing about him that I've thought is he doesn't seem engaged, which ordinarily you're like, why not? But if there's an off-the-field issue at home, and I have no clue if it's, you know, let's say something with his family, his parents, COVID, I don't know. But that would explain a lot, because there have been definite performances by Barrios, Jake DePute, during the course of this summer so far, where you watch him and say, he's not altogether there. It seemed odd, but this might explain that. How about that for a theory?
No, I saw that too. I saw when Marty asked him about it, and I didn't see it on TV. I may have just missed it when he was emotional, but when Marty asked him about it and he was talking about it, I thought, okay, so I totally agree with you. Like, maybe there was something going on. And this is where, you know, I think we as media members and fans and whoever, when we're evaluating these guys, you know, we don't take that into account enough. And it's not really, you can't, because you just don't know.
Right.
But when something like that comes out, it's like, okay, this might be the reason. And it sounds like whatever the issue was is now resolved. I sort of got that.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. Yes.
I couldn't tell, but the fact that they're talking about it now, yeah, and they weren't, like, hopefully it's all resolved and hopefully everything's okay with him and his family, whatever's going on. But yeah, yep, when I saw that, I thought, wow, I wonder if this is why he was so on and off this year. And now maybe this is resolved and he's refocused, because he was pitching. He pitched phenomenal last night. And, you know, it was six innings, three hits, maybe one run, eight strikeouts, somewhere along those lines. But they also gave away so many outs. I tweeted at one point during the game, he was basically averaging four recorded outs an inning, you know? So, I mean, that was to shut down a lineup as good as Chicago, where your defense is giving them extra outs and you're still getting out of these innings without giving up runs. That was an incredibly impressive performance. That was Barrios, maybe not at his 100% best, but, you know, 90th percentile. If he pitches like that consistently the rest of the year, he's
game changer. Game changer. Absolutely. Game changer completely.
Because then you have Maeda and Barrios as a legit 1-2 in that first round playoff series, assuming you get there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, but I can't discount when a player brings something up that is occurring at home, that, because the one start that I thought was weird, and he wasn't bad in the start, but he was, for lack of a better term, Jake, disinterested or super disengaged. The Pittsburgh start at home, because Pittsburgh's just lousy. The Twins got him runs and he pitched okay, but it's like, Jose, this is the Pirates. Just go shove. Like, just go throw your fast. They don't want to play. And he was just, like, nibbling and walking guys. And it was really confusing, because you said to yourself, well, he's not terrible, but he's not really all here. But I always have said this, too. You know, sick parents, pregnant wives, things like that change everything. And players can't be blamed. But to what you said, and you're right, those things are seen, I think, by fans and the media as excuses. So your thoughts on Michael Pineda's start, which was phenomenal, which was great. It was one start. But I think if we were to do just quick first round best of three rotation rankings right now, what we saw from Pineda definitely, at least right now, puts him in that mix.
In the mix, yes. I mean, it was a very good start. You know, and for starting for the first time in basically a year, because I believe it was September 5th or 6th of last year was his last start. Yeah, I mean, that was impressive, and he was clearly ramped up. He threw close to 100 pitches, but Byron Buxton obviously helped him out a lot with that catch. And you know, I don't know if we'll have time to talk about Buxton, but boy, what a phenomenal return for him. Yeah, Pineda looked really good. It's very encouraging. I don't think – all right, so we'll quickly do rotation rankings. I still have Maeda as my number one.
Yep.
Rios gets bumped up to two based on last night, but I want to see more.
Yep.
Before I'm willing to stick to that. And then I still think I have Rich Hill three. And to your point, to your idea that you proposed on Mackey and Judd yesterday or the day before, I would probably handcuff Hill to someone. Either handcuff him to Barrios if Barrios goes back to what he was earlier this year, or maybe handcuff him to Randy Dobnak. I have Pineda on the staff, on the playoff roster. I don't have him starting a game. I have him coming in at this point for an inning or two of relief where he can really air it out. But that could change. It's just one start. It's certainly encouraging. All of the returns were encouraging.
Yep.
Right now he's not in my top three. Give me your top three.
Maeda one. So this is before the Brill start last night. I went Maeda, Pineda, I'll say it slowly, Rich Hill handcuffed to Barrios. After last night, Maeda, Barrios, Pineda, but Hill can still get back in. I can't decide if I can manipulate Hill's pitching and age into something or not. If I can get five, if I can get five quality innings from Rich Hill, I feel pretty damn good, like really good. The problem is, as of late, it feels like I might get three, and then in the fourth, he starts to fall apart, and so I've got to handcuff him to somebody. But you're right, Jake. If Barrios can continue to pitch in a semblance of the way that he did last night against a White Sox team that can certainly hit, like that's not the Pirates, that makes you feel good. He starts for sure. I still think before last night, I still contend the Twins in a best of three would start Barrios in one of the games. After last night, I have no doubt now.
Yeah.
But just like with Hill, Pineda as well, I got it to see more. The only guy right now who I'm just totally comfortable with saying gets a start and it's probably game one is Kenta.
Absolutely.
Like the rest of this, I need to see it, and it's going to be a month or so. But Kenta, I'm comfortable saying he's going to start and deserves to game one. But right now, I guess I go Pineda, Barrios, possible handcuff for Barrios. But if he comes close to the way he pitched last night, the handcuff won't be necessary.
And just real quick on Dobnak, because I don't think you can ignore Dobnak completely. I get that he doesn't miss bats, right? And that some regression is coming because so many balls get put in play with him. But you can't ignore what he's done this year. Yes, his last start wasn't good, but other than that, he's been one of the best starters in the American League.
Yep.
I'm not saying you start him in the playoffs, but he's a guy to me that if you have, say, a three-run lead in the middle innings and you want to eat a couple innings and bridge that gap between, say, Rich Hill, who's maybe giving you four good innings, and the back-end guys, he's a guy that I love to put in there to maybe get some quick innings. And if they're getting hard contact, then you pull him. But when he's on, he's extremely effective and he works quickly. So he's in the mix for me in some way. Probably not starting, but he should pitch innings at some point in that series.
Don't forget Jake, too. At some point in time, he comes back and he could be fine. And by the way, you talk about a guy that unfortunately for him took a gamble.
Yeah.
I mean, Odo thought, I'll take the qualifying offer, I'll make a very fair salary, and then I'm going to hit the free agent market in the winter of 2020-21. Oh, my God. He might make less than the Twins' bat boy next year. I feel bad for that guy. He took a gamble, and on every front, COVID, injury, personal stuff, he got screwed.
Yeah.
He got absolutely screwed. Answer me this on Buxton, okay? What do you do? So Buxton two nights ago comes back, and I'm sorry, but I've turned into just a Buxton apologist. He changes games. Like, he changes games in ways that most people can't, okay? But I get being cautious, to a certain degree, and I get the fact that when you're not, he just tends to get hurt. But you bring up a really intriguing point, which is Byron Buxton to Jake Cave is really going off a cliff. Why do you think the play – so the Twins and Baldelli aren't going to change their stripes. What do you think the play – in, I guess, to use the term again, almost a handcuff type of way – should be with Buxton? Because Jake Cave's not the handcuff. Like, they think he is, but he's not.
So are you asking in terms of playing time? How
frequently? Yeah, well, but they aren't going to play Buxton. They're going to be cautious. I totally get that. But their comeback now is, well, Jake Cave's going to start these games when Byron's not playing. I think what you are saying, and I agree, is that's not really a sufficient answer for a good baseball team. Like, Jake Cave's going to have nice games, but that drop-off is monumental. So what do you think the smartest play, if they're going to continue to spot Buxton, which I think they will, playing time-wise, who ideally would be behind him? So there's going to be a drop-off for sure, but it's not going to be as monumental as Byron to Jake.
Well, I mean, on days that Buxton plays, it has to be either Cave or Wade because nobody else can play center field, really. Kepler, especially now that he's hurt and has been hurting all year, he's just a real stretch in center. So I don't know that you have any other options outside of Jake Cave or Lamont Wade. There's nobody else on the 40-man that can play center field other than Gilberto Celestino, who's not close. So it's one of those two guys. They've determined it's Jake Cave. He had a great game last night, but I still like Wade better because he gets on base, and Jake Cave makes more spectacular plays in the outfield, but he also makes more plays.
He did it last night.
Shake your head, and he did it again last night where he dives for these balls and they get by him. He did it in the playoffs last year. I trust Wade a little bit more, even though he's not as good as good of an athlete as Cave. So Wade's my guy. I love his approach to the plate. He's a smart player. So I think on days you don't play Buxton, I would play Wade, but they're going to play Cave, it looks like. That's just their only option when Buxton doesn't play. They don't have anybody else.
I think this, for 2021, if this team does not go sign a guy who can play center and do it very proficiently, they're crazy. And I think Patrick brought up last year that they should go out. Who was available? Was it Kevin Pillar?
Kevin Pillar. Yes. Okay. I said that they should have traded for him. They should have. They should.
But I mean, but Byron being Byron, that's what you need.
Yeah.
That's what you. I don't need J.K. Like, he tries hard. I get all that. But when you have a guy who you basically have to treat with kid gloves, which you do with Buxton, and I'm an apologist for the guy, okay? But he needs to be treated with kid gloves. You've got to have a guy who you can throw out there and say, this is really as good as an everyday player, not a substitute.
I would have traded for Pillar. He was available. He's a right-handed bat, and the Twins desperately need right-handed bats in the outfield. I would have traded for him. And I would sign him in the offseason. He's not going to require a big deal. I think he's a free agent. He's not going to require a big deal. I would overpay, if other teams are offering him, say, 1 year, $3 million, I would give him an extra $500,000 or whatever to make sure he comes to Minnesota, because he's a guy that's a quality fourth outfielder and can fill in center field when Buxton's out. You're absolutely right. They need somebody like that. They need somebody who's an upgrade over Cave, who plays a really good center. Pillar's a borderline gold glove center fielder.
Right.
He's really good. So I think he would be a really valuable addition to the Twins in 2021. Absolutely.
Exactly. And their pitching staff needs that, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Before we get to Bert, any final Twins thoughts from the field for the last couple nights?
Well, it was encouraging to see the offense perform well. It was a lot of encouraging things. I mean, Donaldson's back and immediately gets a couple of hits. Buxton was phenomenal, looking like a superstar. Pineda was good. So it was an encouraging two games, despite the defensive miscues, and there were many. Luis Arraez, poor guy, had a really, really rough series defensively. But I'm sticking to this. Everybody thinks I'm nuts. But Detroit is only three games back, and again, they have the tiebreaker. You have to win this series. If they take four out of five, you're tied. You're tied with Detroit. So you gotta go hard. You cannot. These cannot be punt games. You cannot throw, you know, mediocre relievers out there and, you know, start a bunch of backups. Like, you have to take the, you have to assume that this Detroit series is like a play-in series. I know a lot of people think that's crazy, but I look at the standings and say it's not, and Detroit just swept you. So those are my takeaways. Great last 2 days for the Twins, but don't let up now. You have to win this Detroit series.
The time for punt games is done.
Yeah.
The punt games of 2020 walked out the door in Cleveland. That's it. All right. So we got a tweet from Burt Blyleven last night that it was his final game. I think it had been agreed to before the pandemic's shortened season started. So I think in Burt's world and the Twins' world, this did not come as a surprise. It surprised fans because I don't think that we knew what Burt's contract called for games-wise. 25 years, I will say this, 25 years is a fantastic run in any business for any job. And in sports broadcasting, it's absolutely stellar. I think this is probably exactly the right move for all parties involved, Jake DePue. How about that for being as nice as possible to say goodbye to Burt?
Yeah, so I will say this. 25 years is a great run. It's always interesting to look back, you know, because it's like I was listening to Burt when I was a little kid, basically, you know. So anytime a guy lasts that long, and Vin Scully is the best example of this, it's an interesting bridge to the past, right? To the organization's history.
For sure.
I'll say this about announcers generally in baseball. Baseball has a problem with announcers not embracing the game and the changes in the game. And you see that at the national level too, with some of the guys that Fox throws out. I don't think a good strategy for capturing new fans and maintaining your current ones is to constantly rip analytics, shifting, pitch counts, you name it. That doesn't do anything for me or for the average fan. Educate us. Tell us something that we don't know about what it's like to play the game. This is what More Know does a great job of, and Roy Smalley as well. And so I'll just say that as a general statement about announcers. But as far as Burt, you know, good run, 25 years, and I'll use your words, probably good for all parties involved. But I wish Burt nothing but the best.
And Burt says that his contract is not being renewed, and so he might not be done broadcasting. But look, baseball announcing analysis also in the last 25 years has probably, in fairness, changed by 50, right? Like, yeah. I grew up with everybody thinking Tim McCarver was the bee's knees because nobody broke down a baseball game like Tim did. There's probably now locally, I don't know, what would you say, half the teams, if not more, who have analysts who are better than McCarver was in his heyday.
Yes.
The Circle Me Phenom of 2002, which is 1,000 years ago now, right, was a Harry Carrion monumental. Everyone thought it was great. It's just changed. And it's why I really like – now Smalley is the exception to the rule here, but it's why I really appreciate going out and getting a guy like Justin, because Morneau is in tune with the game today. He's in tune with players today. He didn't retire that long ago. In defense of Burt, you know, you've been away from the game. You've got to really stay involved to stay involved, and it's probably difficult. And it's where Roy is fantastic, because I don't know how he does it, but Roy breaks down games now like he played 5 days ago. But that's not the norm. And baseball announcing, and I think our expectations when we sit down to watch a game now and be informed as people who think that they know a lot about the sport but didn't play the sport and can certainly learn, I think our expectations have changed greatly. So that's really the key. And it's, you know, it's hard to find. I always love the critics who say, oh, Morneau's too bland for me. You know how little I care if he's bland, if he tells me stuff I don't know? I don't. Like, if he wants to be Mr. Personality, that's cool too. But if he wants to, in a monotone voice, tell me why the hell that guy threw a pitch or the positioning of the shortstop was wrong, I don't care how you say it. You can say it backwards as long as I can at least understand it.
Morneau, and he's like Tony Romo. I mean, he tells you what pitch is coming before it comes. He's extremely good at predicting the game, but just helping everyday fans learn something and understand what's going on. What's going through a pitcher's mind? What's going through a hitter's mind? What's the catcher thinking as he goes through, you know, his set of signs? Like, because Morneau was a catcher coming up in the minor leagues and then switched to first. I loved him as a player. I thought he was a great quote as a player. He's played recently enough that he understands all this stuff. And he has a good relationship with Falvey and Levine. He understands what they're trying to do. And so I'm sure they love him for that, because he can sort of disseminate what Falvey and Levine's approach is to the everyday fan. So more guys like Morneau, that's what I would say. And I thought LaTroy Hawkins was great too, actually. I wish they had him on the broadcast. I really liked him last year. And he speaks his mind, man. He is not afraid. You know, he called out a former teammate on air last
Tommy year. Canely. Tommy he said Canely. That Tommy Canely's the worst teammate I ever had. I've never forgotten that. I know. Canely. I'm like, oh my God, he's the worst teammate ever. This is great.
I couldn't believe he said it too, because there's a code among ex-players that, you know, you don't rip each other in the media.
Nope.
I love LaTroy, man. And the Twins are taking advantage of his smarts. Like, they, you know, he's not just a figurehead for them. He doesn't just go sign autographs. Like, he's involved in developing pitchers and really working with the front office. So LaTroy was great, but yeah, Morneau, it sounds like Morneau's maybe going to take over the sort of main role as the color guy. And I think that's fantastic. Love him.
All right. Score North Twin Show. We'll be back on Tuesday to talk about that big 5-game series. But as Jake DePue said, the Twins have to take seriously. They can't punt, because if they do, they're going to be in trouble. He's Jake. I'm Judd. We'll talk to you later.
And go check out Sports Info Solutions. Great website.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.